Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast, we will be looking at news stories from the week beginning the 19th of August. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, head of research, policy and standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story, Kate, looks at research by Crane et al. In the Conversation newsletter that shows that a CEO's stance on social issues can impact a job seeker's perception of the company. The research found that people are more than 20% likely to want to work for a company where the CEO takes a humanistic stance on a political issue unrelated to their business. This effect is true regardless of the job seeker's age, education, gender, or political orientation. And interestingly, the job seeker does not need to agree with the CEO's views. The researchers believe this is because potential employees view the political stance of the CEO as a signal of how employees will be treated at the company. A CEO who takes a humanistic stance, irrespective of whether that position is shared by the employee, will be seen as an indicator that workers will be treated humanely should they end up working for the company. For many years, managerial convention has been to shy away from taking a principled stand on current affairs and politics for fear of alienating customers, key clients, governments or shareholders. But this research suggests that if they want to attract top candidates, CEOs and companies will need to be more vocal in addressing social and environmental challenges. Kate, what do you believe the implications are of this research for leaders?
Well, with any change in attitudes and opinions, there's multiple factors that influence them. I think here we have the rise of the personality CEO. Well, rather than being an anonymous person in the background, they've come much more to the front of organisations. We've also got the big issues of the time, such as sustainability, being talked about everywhere, and the rise of authentic leadership, or the emphasis that we're putting on honesty, integrity, ethical behaviour. So as a spokesperson for the company, the CEO should be seen to be authentic. And of course, being authentic often means giving your own opinion about something rather than just following a party line. It makes you human. It makes you seem more approachable. And when it comes to how you treat other people as a potential employee, really important. So it's a reminder to CEOs to be more authentic, to understand what their values are, to be able to articulate them, and to always talk about putting people first.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story looks at manipulation in the workplace. In his article in Fast Company, David Neagle describes manipulation as being all about control and being used to gain power in a situation, enabling one side to have all the advantage while the other feels demoralised. The person controls your behaviours and decisions to get what he or she wants, and the result is a toxic environment that is not only demoralising but also derails your success. For example, you're nervous or dread going to work because you don't know what to expect from your boss. You are scared to share your thoughts and ideas in a meeting for fear of retribution or backlash. You have a co-worker offer to do a favour, but then they make you obligated and indebted to them. Or you may confide in a colleague at work, only to have them use it against you in a complete violation of trust. In all these cases, you are being manipulated, and you may not even realise it. Kate, what advice would you give to someone who felt that they were being manipulated by a colleague in the workplace?
I wonder about the use of the word manipulated here, because if I worked with somebody like this, I'd feel rather more than I'd just be manipulated. I'd feel betrayed. I'd feel that person wasn't trustworthy. The idea of going into work and finding your boss being so volatile that you never know what to expect would really raise your levels of stress and anxiety. If you are being treated like this, when your trust is being violated or somebody does something for you as a favour and then later seems to take that favour back, that's a toxic work environment, and that's undoubtedly the case. You have to call out that behaviour and describe it as it is. It's untrustworthy. There's a lack of integrity about it. And actually find at some point you have to say, it's intolerable working here. because I can't trust these people. So whether they're manipulative, because we do know of situations where one can be manipulated by others, but not necessarily in a malicious way. We might use flattery, or we might arrange an event that we know somebody is going to be drawn to, and they behave in a way we want them to. We could call that manipulation, but there's no evil intent. And I think with all of these examples, the intent is not good, it's not kind, and who would want to work with these people?
Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Kate. Our next story is the widely reported story that Emma Watson has launched a new hotline that offers free legal advice regarding sexual harassment in England and Wales. The hotline is designed to help women hold their employers and harassers accountable and is the first of its kind, something Watson finds completely staggering, she told Fast Company. Anyone who needs legal advice for dealing with these types of situations can call the hotline and speak with someone from the non-profit Rights of Women organisation without paying the lofty fees traditional lawyers often charge. Understanding what your rights are, how you can assert them, and the choices you have if you've experienced harassment is such a vital part of creating safe workplaces for everyone, and this advice line is such a huge development, ensuring that all women are supported wherever we work, said Emma. Kate, is this initiative by someone very much in the public eye to be welcomed?
Getting advice and support and somebody being interested in your predicament when you are feeling very badly treated is great. How could we not say, well done, Emma Watson, for doing this? The question I really want to ask is to the HR departments that are not supporting these women, or the policies are not in place that support these women so they don't have to go outside the organisation. There are many sources of support that employers can provide. So, yes, Emma, keep on challenging, but HR, please keep asking yourself why there is a need to this. Why are you allowing practices to continue that are causing so many women so much distress?
Thank you, Kate. Our final story is taken from BBC Worklife and asks, can phone booths solve the problem of open plan offices? Phone booths are freestanding one-person pods, often with a stool and a ledge that serves as a desk. Most have glass doors but are soundproof, so workers can see outside but speak with privacy. They are glorified phone booths, but indoors and without a phone. And in the past few years, they have really taken off in Mumbai co-working spaces, Japanese train stations, and private offices all over North America and the UK. Reasons for the rapid growth in the office phone booth market is thought to be growing disillusionment with loud and exposed open offices, and also because they are popular with millennial workers who, according to Ethan Bernstein, an associate professor of business administration at Harvard Business School, are used to working in lots of different kinds of spaces and are more likely to try and take an office space and make it their home. Kate, do you believe that phone booths are an attractive and workable alternative to open plan offices?
It would seem, looking at the examples that you've given us here, what people are really looking for is some sort of privacy to have a conversation without being overheard. If you are in a public space or an open plan office, you don't know who's listening to your conversation. You don't know whether bits are going to be repeated, taken out of context. And although there's an argument that it encourages a sort of openness and transparency that's commendable, sometimes conversations are better if they're kept private. So if this is a solution that people are finding acceptable, I don't think it's about millennials being able to work in different spaces. I think it's people just want to have private conversations sometimes.
Thank you very much, Kate. Before we conclude this week's episode, is there anything you'd like to tell us from the Institute? Is there anything happening that listeners should be aware of?
Our listeners who want to attend our Let's Talk Values conference series, which is taking place throughout the UK as we did last year. Bookings are being made very quickly for London on the 24th of September, but we've also got Manchester on the 7th of October and South Wales on the 31st of October. So lots of opportunities to come along, network with other members, and Let's Talk Values.
Thank you very much, Kate. It's always good to leave on a very positive note. This concludes this week's episode, and listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.